looking to throw over the middle and into the end zone. Touchdown, Arizona State.
We support each other's teams the rest of the year, but during this game, all bets are off.
That was all Keaton Slovis. Wow, what a play by him.
One man to beat, 15-10-5. Touchdown, a new NCAA record. Dante Pettis.
Washington State has found a way to move the ball. It's incredible what we're seeing here in Pullman tonight.
Touchdown, Oregon. They fake the handoff. Justin Herbert delivers a dart.
I went to HR several times about how the Duck fans treat me.
Touchdown, Utah.
I mean, this is the Pac-12 we're talking about. Welp, the regular season is over. We made it through the COVID year. Well, what we hope is the actual only COVID year, and we will break down the final weekend slate of games for you right here on Believe in the Pac-12 on the Believe Podcast Network, along with ESPN. Oh, God damn it. Sorry, I was about to say ESPN call because it's already still ingrained. Let me restart that.
Well, you can. I think I got the Cheez-It bowl. So you can.
Oh well. Yeah, okay. So.
Don't promote that though. They haven't given me the contract yet.
Okay, I won't. I'll just restart the intro. Well, we somehow made it through the coronavirus season. Hopefully, it's the only COVID season, and we get a sense of normalcy. Nonetheless, 7 weeks of Pac-12 football have come and gone, and we will break down the final weekend, including the Pac-12 championship, for you right here on Believe in the Pac-12, along with Ryan Leaf, SiriusXM college football analyst. My name is Jonathan Rifkind. Delighted to be with you on a Monday afternoon is when we're recording this. It'll drop on Monday evening, and most of you will probably listen throughout the week because this is a very prevalent podcast. We're going to go over the four games Arizona-Cal got canceled that happened this previous weekend in the final slate of Pac-12 football games. Maybe we'll go over some of the bowl matchups that will be happening. And then don't worry, folks, we won't leave you hanging after this podcast. We'll have some pop-up pods. We'll keep you in the loop on everything that is going on around the nation as well as in the Pac-12. But for Ryan, you know, the college football playoff rankings came out yesterday. We did a bit of a show, but I think it's good to reiterate here on this podcast something that you have been pointing out, and that is the fact that it just wasn't going to change, and it didn't. We have the top four seeds. It's exactly the top four seeds that you have been predicting, that most analysts within the business have been predicting. Before we move to the Pac-12 conversation here, also, the coaches came out with their own polls, which shows that the biases and the agendas are just so out of whack all over the place with everybody. You know, give us your – now that we're 24 hours away or after the final college football playoff rankings release, what are your thoughts now that you've had some time to process what has happened?
Incredibly unfair. But if your goal is to crown a national champion and have the two best teams play for the national championship, the two best teams got in and they'll most likely play for the national championship, Clemson and Alabama. But I'll tell you this. If they did what the FCS does this year and this year only, here are your matchups. Okay, everybody, Alabama versus BYU. BYU, the talk of the year, the game of the year when they chose to play on a 36-hour timeline against Coastal Carolina. That would be in the first round. You know, BYU would probably be a 28-point underdog, right? Maybe more. Who knows? But don't forget, we just watched a 24-point. An underdog win on the road. Okay. It's fun. It's enjoyable. Iowa versus Clemson. Iowa's probably one of the most skilled teams coming down the stretch out of the Big Ten right now. I would say that if they would have had to play Ohio State in the Big Ten championship, it would have been, you know, a better chance than Northwestern in that game. And Northwestern was close. Northwestern, Ohio State would be 3-4 matchup, which we just saw, and it was a close game. North Carolina, Notre Dame, which we saw a couple weeks ago, and it was a 7-point game until late in the fourth quarter. A&M Coastal, I like that one. I would love to see that game. Indiana, Oklahoma, that one I want to see. Iowa State, Florida. Hell yeah. The committee said all year that Iowa State was so impressive. They got all the way up to six. They were ahead of Florida, actually, after a week ago. It's crazy as they lose to the number 10 team in the country. They fall four spots. Florida gets beat by Alabama. They don't move. They stay at seven. Nothing changes. And then we would have Cincinnati, Georgia, which I think would be – those eight games I think would be entertaining as hell. Now, ultimately, it still may be Alabama-Clemson when that tournament's over, and that's the way it should be. But the committee has removed all semblance of enjoyment outside these four teams. Like the rest of the season, the rest of the games played don't exist. And that's shameful. And unfortunately, they told us that a team that's only played four games is enough of a resume, is enough of an eye test that they can be in the college football playoff. And that is just not fair. And I thought this year would be the year that, since it was a pandemic season, that the most deserving should have got in this year. And Ohio State wasn't the most deserving team this year. But away we go.
Away we go. That's the best, I guess, the best way to put it, because what else is there to do? I have some bowl pressing questions, some just, you know, tie in some conversations that have been happening nationally with some of these programs that we'll get to at the end, but I think it's prevalent now to hit the Pac-12. Recapping this past weekend, obviously USC finishes the season ranked 17th in the college football playoff rankings. They are 21st. They drop eight spots in the AP top 25. Oregon creeps in at 25. In both polls. I'm not going to argue with that. The fact that Oregon's ranked is fine. USC being above them, they should be because they had a one loss. You disagree.
There's no reason for USC to be in the top 20 or the top 25, to be honest with you.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think Colorado doesn't play, gets screwed out of it, and gets moved out of the top 25. So I don't understand that at all. This is such a subjective matter on how this goes about, any of it, and it's not gonna, nothing's gonna change it. So, you know, you have an opinion on what you think should be. I was giving USC the benefit of the doubt all year long because they kept finding a way to win, and they had every chance to just showcase themselves and their talent and everything on Friday night, and they absolutely just threw up all over themselves, you know, once again, when an opportunity presented it. And so I don't believe they deserve to be in the top 25 right now at all. I can't believe Clay Helton put his team down as the 13th ranked team in the country again. Now I get it. He's the head coach of that said team and he's doing it for his players. But I mean, that's blindness to what reality is. Really it is. I can't believe how poorly they played when they had a chance to really make a statement for themselves. I really don't care about the Pac-12 through that process, but this was for themselves. And I think for a lot of people that have been sticking up for Clay and, you know, to see the poor clock management, game management, all of that, that comes down on him and how he goes about things. And they're exactly where Clay Helton like lives in, and that's limbo. Like everybody in the country who loves USC wishes they would have lost all those close games. And no one was rooting for USC to win that game on Friday night except you. You know? Because you needed your 3 points.
Exactly. Yeah, I was only doing it again, happy to be wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy to be wrong. I'd rather be wrong and happy than right and disappointed. And my Oregon Ducks did pull out another Pac-12 championship. We'll get to that last on the slate. What's more absurd, Clay Helton giving USC a 13th rank in his coaches poll or Dabo Swinney ranking Ohio State 11th?
Well, Dabo really has said all along that six games for him, it's not enough. He understands what it's like to be the head of the spear, right, and have to go out and play week in and week out and get everybody's best shot. And Ohio State did not have to do that this year. Everybody always gives them their best shot, but they didn't have five of those games.
But 11 to do it. 11 is behind Coastal, behind – I mean, that's pretty low.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I mean, I had Ohio State at 5. Okay, you know, so it's a little bit of a, you know, petty cheap shot.
Yeah,
but I'm also like, hey, if in your mind you are like, I don't care. I know what it's like to be really, really good and be a 35-point favorite at Syracuse and get beat. Okay, so I know how difficult it is when you get everybody else's best shot. And when you don't have to play those games, that plays into an effect for him. That's his understanding of it. So he's like, I'm going to give the team of Coastal Carolina that played 11 games and scheduled one on a 36-hour timetable and won.
Yep.
I'm going to give them more credit. I'm going to give them what they deserve in all of this, just like I did. I have Coastal at 8. I have Louisiana at 10. That's my top 10, okay? They're deserving. There's no way Iowa State belongs ahead of Louisiana. And yet Louisiana is at 19, and Iowa State is at 10 with 3 losses. The other one is just simply this is – how much of proof could this be in terms of the committee telling the group of 5, you will never, and I mean ever – get in the top 4 of the playoff ever. Undefeated Cincinnati, conference champion, behind 3-loss Florida. That right there is telling you that they will never put a group of 5 team in the playoff.
Yeah, no, it's pretty absurd. I apologize, Ryan. I'll delete this part. My camera flipped, but I'm still here. I'll flip in a sec. I agree. And by the way, to prove how valuable ULL right now is, Billy Napier turned down the Auburn interview, head coach at ULL. Now, I'm not sure if that's because he thinks that there's a better job out there, but he's firmly in belief that ULL, they have something special going down there in Lafayette, Appaloosa's area, and he wants to stick with the Raging Cajuns. I don't blame him. So, I think that for the most part, how you feel about this, Ryan, is definitely how most people or the people that have been following the program. All right, let's move over here to the Pac-12 conversation. As we've much alluded to, we'll end with the Friday Pac-12 championship. I think that's the best way to sort of cap this conversation. Then we'll have some bowl game previews within the Pac-12. Then I have a couple of questions regarding the national perspective and some of the conversations, the pressing conversations that are going on with programs, perhaps outside of the Pac-12. And we will get to those after. All right. So let's start with the Saturday games, Utah, Washington State. Washington State was up 28-7 at half. You texted me and said, we were way off on Washington State. And then what, 45 minutes later, you said, just kidding, we weren't. So 7-14-24, second, third, and fourth quarter scoring for Utah. They went 45-28. Washington State looked like they were going to run away with this thing at halftime. They imploded. Utah took advantage, ends their season 3-2. Ryan, explain to me how it was a tale of two halves for Washington State, because, I mean, they look like a totally different beast in the first half, and then just look completely flat out there in the second.
Well, I'm going to be honest. I turned it off at halftime. It was 28-7. I thought it was going to end. I actually thought the game was going to end up like 42-17 or something like that, you know, and I thought I had seen enough. And I didn't turn it off. I just turned the sound off and was watching the other games. Of course, Notre Dame and Clemson had kicked off. And so I was paying more attention to that. And then I looked down and then I'm ashamed to say, then I was more worried about, oh, it looks like Utah's coming back. I hope they can get to 11 points and we can cover. And then they got I don't know if it was a fumble or an interception that got taken back to the house that made it 42-28 or something. And I just went, oh my God, how does that happen? And it just looked like they ran out of gas. Like this season had come to, they hit this wall. Max Borgi hadn't played all year, was a dominant force in the first half. He was kind of non-existent in the second half. Kyle Whittingham and his staff really, really made great adjustments at halftime. And that's exactly what coaching is about in Division I, Power 5 football. Just like in the NFL, is what kind of adjustments can you make at halftime? Because you have an idea going into the game, but teams can surprise you. But what do you see in that first half where you can make changes that can effectively change the outcome of the game? And Utah, once again, did that to a young, inexperienced coaching staff for Washington State. I thought they would get more quarterback play from some other guys. They stuck with Jaden Delora for quite a while. Cam Cooper, the local product there from Utah, got a chance to get in. So it's going to be an interesting offseason when it comes to the quarterback position at Washington State and how they get better so they can compete a year from now.
Ty Jordan, 22 for 154 and 3 touchdowns on the ground for Utah. That ended up really being the difference in that second half. And by the way, you mentioned the scoring play on defense. It was a fumble return by freshman defensive back Clark Phillips III. He returned it to the house. He's had a tough season out there in the secondary being attacked. And he didn't make up for it because they lost a few games with him out there in the secondary. But it has to feel pretty good to cap off your season if you're the young freshman and one of the highest, actually, recruit in Utah's history. They flipped him from Ohio State prior to the season. So Utah wins 45-28. Remains to be seen on both sides of the quarterback situation. But Utah in a little bit of a better position, I think, than Washington State. All right, the game that went to double overtime ended up with a one-point victory. Stanford over UCLA, 48-47. This was a fantastic game. This was a really, really good game. We both said we both took the points. It was Stanford plus 3. They wouldn't buy one. You had Stanford winning. I had UCLA winning, but on a push or some crazy play. Stanford was up, 20? I believe it was 22-3 at half, and then UCLA comes roaring back in that second half. They put up 14 in the third, 17 in the fourth, 13 in that first overtime. They just couldn't get the job done in Stanford. The dominant first half ended up proving the difference in that game. Davis Mills, though, 428, 3 touchdowns. I know that the Mercury News, Ryan, came out with their sort of like their picks for first and second team for the Pac-12. And it was Tyler Shuck for the first team quarterback and Keaton Slovis for the second team quarterback. But to be honest with you, based on what we've seen, I know he got screwed out of 2 games. Davis Mills deserves to be in the conversation for one of the best quarterbacks this season in the conference. Am I wrong to say that?
He was by far head and shoulders the best quarterback in the Pac-12 this year. So I saw that too. John Wilner wrote that. And when I saw Tyler Shuck, you know, Tyler Shuck has some crazy stats this year. There's some impressive stats, but he wasn't, if you gave the most outstanding player this year offensively to any team, Jarek Broussard, I can see that in Colorado, but Davis Mills. And I really thought that team hit the wall at halftime. I mean, they've been on the road for 18 consecutive days, played fourth consecutive road games after having to go to Cal to play in the big game and win that game by 1. But I told you this 3 weeks ago. I said, when this road trip started, when this is all said and done, we're going to look at Stanford and they're going to be the best team in the Pac-12. And if it would have been a 12-game season and COVID didn't exist, David Shaw would have had a North champion this year in Stanford. And I wouldn't have been surprised if it ended up being Arizona State and Stanford in the Pac-12 championship this year if a full season had been played. Those two teams are playing the best of anybody right now, other than maybe Oregon, because Oregon looked really good defensively at least. And so Stanford for me, and this game would have been over before regulation even played into it if Jet Toner could hit an extra point. They needed Sarah Fuller is what they needed, just to make sure you had extra points and you win that game outright. I remember every time that Stanford scored late there to tie it up, I was like, please, David, Coach Shaw, go for 2. End this season, please. But he kept kicking the extra point, and Toner freaking bangs it off the upright and almost misses it to cost him the game. And finally, you know, also I had him plus 6.5. I couldn't have UCLA win by 7. That would just ruin my life. So so when Chip Kelly scored there on the final touchdown and he said, we're going to go for 2 to win this thing, I was like, thank you. Because at that point, I didn't care. I mean, a little more bragging rights because I picked them to win outright. But, you know, if they win by 1 or lose by 1, you know, I still win in my mind. And we all know it's about me.
On this podcast, it certainly is. Just some Jet Toner stats for you here. He was 63.5% on his field goals this year. That's tied for 119th in the country. Now, there were 160 kickers that kicked off a field goal or kicked a field goal this year. So he was 119 out of 160. His extra point percentage, 139th. And this is a short season. I mean, the sample size for some of these other kickers was much larger than Jet Toner. So his margin of error was smaller. And of the 162 kickers who kicked extra points, Jet Toner was 139th in that class. So not great, not a great showing for the man with one of the best names, I think, in football. But nonetheless, Stanford gets the win. For UCLA, though, Demetric Felton, their star running back, said that he was going actually, he didn't say it prior. He said it after the game that he would declare for the NFL draft, get ready. They declined their bowl bid. Their season is done. But Britton Brown looked pretty good, 20 carries, 219 yards on the ground against a team that is pretty staunch up front, typically in David Shaw's defense. For UCLA, I mean, they ended up the season under 500, but they were in every single game that they played. Are you surprised, not at the overall record, but the overall play from Chip Kelly's squad this season?
No, because they went 3-4, so not surprised at all.
But extract the record, because they were in every single game they played.
Not the point. If you lose games, who cares? If they win them, they're 7-0.
Oy.
That for me is I don't take, like, you know,
moral victories.
Moral victories in this. It's his third year. You know, finish it. Finish these games. Now, I will say this. I do think playing those close games and having a chance of being 7-0 is beneficial education. But I think a lot of this, you know, Demetric Felton being gone, DTR, I don't know what he's going to do. He got hurt. I don't know if he's coming back or not. I think they have a solid replacement in Griffin at quarterback. But, you know, they still can't get it done. And again, for the, third consecutive year, they win three games.
Yep.
I think they won, you know. So he hasn't even gotten double figures in terms of wins yet in his career there. And next year is going to be a make or break year. If they do not get to a bowl game next year, or even, I think, compete for the South title, we could be talking about Chip Kelly no longer coaching there anymore.
That remains to be seen. UCLA finishes their season 3-4, Stanford 4-2. And who would have known, like you said, what would happen if Davis Mills didn't have, he got kind of screwed with the false positive and had to sit out 2 weeks, which is just a travesty. But that's coronavirus. That's the season that these players, unfortunately, had to endure, or fortunately, depending on which side you're on. All right, final game on Saturday, Arizona State, Oregon State. Oregon State doing what Oregon State does. Very interesting fourth quarter, some decision-making by Jonathan Smith that was questioned, but nonetheless, they lose 46-33. Arizona State ends the season 2-2, Oregon State 2-3. You said it earlier. If we had a full season, Arizona State may have had the opportunity to represent the South in the Pac-12 championship because they're playing their best football. Their dynamic offense, their defense was stepping up a little bit. But I want to talk about Oregon State here because, again, they lost by 13, but another game that they didn't totally feel out of come midway through the third when they did score their 12th point in the quarter, and it felt like maybe they could muster up an opportunity to get back into this game. For Oregon State, another team who, I mean, of the seven games they were really in, six of them, one of their wins was against Oregon. What do you make of the season for Jonathan Smith and the Beavers?
Wonderful season. See, that there are moral victories at Oregon State.
Okay.
It doesn't exist at UCLA because expectations are different. Jonathan Smith are changing expectations at Oregon State. And I guarantee they go to a bowl game a year from now. I guarantee they win six games a year from now. They're a problem for anybody they've played in the Pac-12 now. Now it's not just write down a W when you have Oregon State scheduled on your schedule. It's different. Jonathan Smith has done that. He's going to get them to a bowl. He's going to get a huge extension to stay there in Corvallis. He's going to do it. This is going to be the place. And I'm really, really excited to see what he continues to bring to the table. Very interesting. The great fourth down play he made where they snapped it through the legs to the tailback where they threw the tight end pop pass. Wonderful imagination to get that play done. So as for Arizona State, Jaden Daniels lost Brandon Ayuk. That was huge. Brandon Ayuk made Jaden Daniels a much better quarterback a year ago. And he just had too many young, inexperienced receivers that I think a lot of people thought were going to be better than they were. Johnny Wilson is going to have to be a tight end, plain and simple. He's not the wide receiving type of of player. He's going to have to be kind of a Kelce, Kittles, you know, guy out there. And that's just how it's going to be. And it's okay. He can make a great living at the next level doing it. He just wasn't as explosive as a lot of people thought he was going to be. Who was their running game and who they were up front on offense. Jaden Daniels is athletic enough to get out on the perimeter and do some great things with his feet, but he went 8 for 15. I know the weather was bad, but he's not going to be a guy that leads your team throwing the football. You guys are going to be a pro style offense, I think, in terms of how you run it physically, use play action, utilize Jaden Daniels on the perimeter with his feet, let him make some plays, and then be a good, strong defense. Now, defensively, they got to get better. You know, they allowed a ton of points to an Oregon State team. It just seemed like people were running free up and down that field all game long on both sides. But ultimately, you know, Arizona State's going to be hard to control offensively if they can score 70 and 40. What did they score this game? 40-something?
46. So,
yeah. 46. So, yeah, they're special. They're a special football team, you know, they're going to have to prove it a year from now. That's for sure.
Ironically for Oregon State, no touchdowns for Jamar Jefferson. The two touchdowns on the ground actually came from Jack Coletta, who's a linebacker for them. He had 6 carries for 44 yards in those two touchdowns. Big body that they utilized. Like you said, the creativity from Jonathan Smith coming in once again, recognizing another player who typically plays defense, coming in and scoring those two touchdowns, keeping them in that game. Arizona State ends their season 2-2, 46-33 over Oregon State, who ends their season 2-5. But the big win, of course, against rival Oregon Ducks in the formerly known as Civil War game. All right, let's move on to that Pac-12 championship. No Washington because of coronavirus. No Colorado because they got screwed out of a game. Arizona Cal got canceled as well because of COVID on both sides. I have a Colorado question for you, but we'll get to that after we recap this game. Excuse me. So Oregon went up 14-7 after the first. They led the entire game. Felt like maybe USC had one more magical fourth quarter in them, but they fell short because you can only do it so many times in a season, apparently. And like you said, they sort of fell over themselves in this game. Oregon wins 31-24, another Mario Cristobal Pac-12 championship. He did indeed sign his 6-year, $27.5 million extension, so he will likely be staying in Eugene, at least for the foreseeable future. Nonetheless,
he could leave next year.
Yeah, he could. He could pull our Mel Tucker, Willie Taggart, and get out of Dodge, and you know,
whenever he wants. There's nothing stopping him.
That's true. Very true. And with the contract, I mean, there are plenty of attractive potential opportunities that will give him more money than what the $5.5 to $6 million that he will eventually make a year at the helm at Oregon. Nonetheless, USC, like you mentioned earlier, you gave them benefit of the doubt. They couldn't get it done. They lose, and they're in purgatory now. They're not gonna fire Clay Helton. Do you feel like Graham Harrell is a coach in waiting a little bit? Because remember, it was rumored that he was gonna take the job at Utah State, and he didn't. And there have been other coaching opportunities, and he hasn't even inquired, at least from what I've heard within the program. Is he a coach in waiting at USC?
I hope not. I mean, he hasn't developed Keaton Slovis at all. You know, that for me is a big thing. You know, we continue to hear Keaton Slovis's name as, like, I heard Danny Cannell say it last week on his radio show that he's a first-round draft pick. And I'm like, what? Those are the two first team and second team quarterbacks that Wilner has in it. And that's the Pac-12's top two quarterbacks? No. I mean, Keaton Slovis had – if I had that receiving core – that he has at USC, I would be destroying people. I mean, destroying them. And he hasn't even come close. Washington State's the only game where he utilized those guys and put a dominant beatdown. We have not seen that. The defense played much better. Todd Orlando did a much better job defensively mixing things up, and I thought that was the most improvement of that football team. I thought it was is it a developmental year? Is it a wasted season? It's never a wasted season if you get a chance to play games and improve. I just don't know how much they improved at the quarterback position. You know more about the recruiting. Who's the quarterback they got coming in this next year?
Ty Thompson, 5-star quarterback from Katy, Texas.
Yeah. So now it's going to take a lot to beat him out because he's got a ton of experience. He's built up a ton of equity. But if this young kid comes in and is as highly touted as you say and as good as he is, there should be a spirited competition that takes place. And it wouldn't – it's you know, it may not be high odds, but it wouldn't surprise me if ultimately Keaton Slovis isn't the starting quarterback there next year, because he has not gotten better. He's either stayed the same or regressed, in my opinion.
And they also have four-star quarterback Kmet Miller-Moss out of Mater Dei. We'll see if he even plays football this year in Southern California, committed as well. And you're right. It's going to be interesting. And, you know, when Keaton Slovis started last – or not started, when he came in for an injured JT Daniels last year against Fresno State and amounted what was eventually actually a comeback because they were down in that game, and everybody's like, oh, this guy's going to be the savior of USC. Ended up solidifying the starting job. Jack Sears transferred to San Diego State. And JT Daniels eventually transferred out of the program. It felt like Keaton Slovis was going to take the next step, and you're right.
What was the biggest win last year for USC?
The biggest win for USC last year?
Yeah, what do you think it was? It was a Utah win, yeah, right?
On that, I guess that makes sense.
And who was the quarterback?
For USC?
Yeah.
It was Keaton Slovis, wasn't it?
Jack Sears.
Jack Sears started that game?
No, he didn't start it. He played the whole game and threw about three touchdowns.
Oh, they won 30-23. You're absolutely right. Jack Sears, yep. And no, Matt Fink. Matt Fink played.
Sorry, Matt Fink. Matt Fink was the quarterback that played.
Yeah. Regardless, it wasn't Keaton Slovis.
That was their biggest win of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's still their biggest win. I would say maybe the Arizona State is their next biggest win under Keaton Slovis. He doesn't have a – you know, like people talk about Heisman moments. He doesn't have a game where I'd put the stamp on it, you know? I haven't seen it yet. So, you know, we'll see how this all plays out. They haven't, you know, I thought maybe last year they were winning games and they played Oregon down in the Coliseum last year and just got absolutely boat raced. So that wasn't it. And then I thought a bowl game against Iowa against a non-conference opponent. Nope. You know? So I don't think he has a signature win yet. And you know, you can't be a first-round draft pick if you don't even have a signature win to your name. I still don't think that's something you can do. But he'll get to come back next year as a sophomore if he wants, which means he actually has 3 years of eligibility left. So if he could be the quarterback for essentially 5 years for USC, he could – I wonder how they're going to do that for records. That would kind of suck for Luke Falk. That was my comparison. That was my comparison, by the way, Luke Falk to Keaton Slovis.
Because so, the way that they're using the air raid?
Yeah, and I just think, I mean, Keaton, you know, Luke Falk's the all-time leading passer ever in the Pac-12, right? He got drafted in the sixth round. Yep. He started an NFL game. It was a compliment to Keaton Slovis, but people didn't like that comparison. And I'm like, well, I think it's pretty accurate, you know?
Was Michael Crabtree – he wasn't there. No, Luke Falk was way later than the Michael Crabtree year. Like, Luke Falk didn't have the weapons that Keaton Slovis even has at USC, not near the weapons, right?
Oh, I thought he had some pretty good weapons at Washington State. He had Michael Crabtree was at –
he did
Graham
have
Harrell. Michael Crabtree was at Texas Tech with Graham Harrell.
Okay.
Luke Falk was at Washington State with River Craycraft and Gabe Marks. He had some really talented wide receivers at his description. I mean, they weren't five-star guys. They were high recruits like what Keaton Slovis has. So, I thought the comparison was right. As of right now, I'd say Luke Falk's a better quarterback than Keaton Slovis. He's got to prove it. You know, he's got to prove it.
On the other side, Tyler Shuck, 8-for-15, 91 yards, an interception. Anthony Brown came in, threw four passes, two of those for touchdowns. Completed three
of
them.
They had a package ready for him inside the five, though.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. And it's a grad transfer, like you said, like because it's a wasted. It's not a wasted year. It's a free year. Why not throw in some schemes? And the package worked. I mean, he had three rushes as well. With that being said, Oregon fans are frustrated with Shuck. And I texted you. I said maybe it was hyperbolic. Maybe I was frustrated in the moment as well. I do think there's going to be a battle there no matter what, because they're going to have Jay Butterfield on the roster. Who knows what happens with the transfer portal, and they have a five-star coming in as well. Nonetheless, you feel like Tyler Shuck in our full season with spring game will be the guy for the Oregon Ducks?
I don't know. I will say this. Give him a year, an offseason, a true offseason, to work face-to-face with Joe Moorhead and his offense, a full spring. A full fall camp. I expect a competitive race because of how they've recruited at the quarterback position. But I do think that there is something there. I also know that his ex-offensive coordinator is the new head coach at UNLV. And if it doesn't work out, I have a sneaky suspicion where the transfer portal will take him.
Yeah, UNLV team that I think – do they even play a game? I think they're 0-5 still. They played at Hawaii. I think they're 0-6.
Yeah, they didn't win a game this year. So
yeah, Marcus Rowe, tough operating out there in Vegas in a program that just has been non-existent in football for quite some time. Ironically, a lot of people thought that even though Justin Herbert pulled out the victory on Thursday Night Football in what was a great Oregon versus Oregon quarterback matchup, by the way, matchup of the year, I'm calling it right now with my biases. A lot of people thought that Marcus Roy was in the stadium calling the plays towards the end of that fourth quarter when Justin Herbert attempted one pass and they decided to run the ball ineffectively against the Raiders. Anyways, just a little Marcus Roy humor for you. All right, that wraps up the recap of the weekend. Oregon is your Pac-12 champions. Two Pac-12 teams end up ranked in the final rankings, depending on where you look. USC is either 21 or 17. Oregon finishes at 25 in both. So before we wrap up the show, and we will have another pod to preview the two Pac-12 teams in the bowl games, the Fiesta Bowl, Oregon-Iowa State. Colorado's taking on Texas in the Alamo Bowl. Two teams that have matched up actually 18 times in their career. The last time, though, was in 2009. Texas has a 5-game winning streak against Colorado going back to 2002. I have a question for you. So this whole conversation surrounding Army, Ryan. Army finishes 7-2 this season. They did not get invited to a bowl win or to a bowl game. Excuse me. Jeff Monken, the head coach, coming out with a statement expressing how they want to play. They'll play anybody, anywhere. And he's getting a lot of support. This has been seemingly the most prevalent conversation across bowl season, minus maybe Indiana getting snubbed out of a New Year's Six Bowl, which I think they should be playing Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl instead of Iowa State. That's a separate conversation. What do you make of the situation going on and the surrounding conversations with Army right now?
Well, of course. I mean, I don't think anybody should be playing bowl games, but I'm not, I can't stop any from doing it. If they weren't extended an invitation, there's just not enough bowl games to go around this year. Now, if I'm somebody like Mississippi State who won two games and is going to a bowl game, I'd say, you know what? We're not deserving of it. Why don't we send Army, who not only when they get done playing football are going to protect us and serve our country, but let them play another game of football? That's the type of thing I would see happen. To be honest with you, pressure like this tends to lead to action. So we may see something in the next few days that opens something up. You might see a team that simply goes, hey, you want a game? Why don't you come? We'll come out there and play at West Point. It'll be a lot of fun. You know, who knows if somebody does that to make it into something bigger. I understand the bowl games and the money that comes with it are different, but there are a lot of games that aren't being played this year, and it wouldn't be disappointing if a team actually backed out and said we love Army to get this opportunity.
Yeah, a pay it forward type situation open here for one of those teams that, like you said, a 2-win Mississippi State team whose 1-1 was the opener against LSU, a game that everybody thought they were going to get blown out, but nonetheless, not a great season for Mike Leach and his inauguration down there in Starkville. For the Pac-12, every other team except for Oregon and Colorado has backed out. No Stanford, UCLA, Arizona State, or USC. Utah's also declined their bowl invitation. So the season basically over for the Pac-12. We'll see what happens with the bowl games. We will preview those at a date to be announced. We will keep you posted on social media about that as well. But I guess with that, we'll cap it there. Thank you so much for sticking with us this season.
Wait. We should document this and make sure this is on the record, okay? The reason I want to have another pod is because I want you to have a chance to win one weekend, okay? Because it's been, what, 7 weeks? 7 consecutive weeks.
This feels like a backhanded opportunity. It feels like you have an ulterior motive here.
There's no ulterior motive. I feel.
I don't want your pity. I don't want you to feel bad for me.
Well, there's empathy there. There's empathy there too. I went 1-15 one season in the NFL, so I know what it feels like to lose constantly every single weekend and get berated not only by the person that you're getting beat by, but then you look at yourself in the mirror every day and you're like, oh no. So we're going to give another chance, but you know, everybody should know out there, and those of you that are listening to the pod, if you've listened to the pod for the last 3 weeks, you'd want to made a heck of a lot of money following my lead, people. I'm 11-2-1 in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, follow Ryan's lead. Don't follow mine on Guess the Lines right now. When you say look in the mirror and you're sort of mentally beating yourself up, yeah, that after, every Sunday morning, I'm like, how the hell did I pick these teams in this spread again? But all right, you know what? I will take it and I'll run with it. But I do want to acknowledge that I am perfectly okay living and dying by my own decisions. Nonetheless, we will have another podcast. I will have another opportunity to go 0-8 this year. Why not? Why not make it an even number? I'm more of an even number fan anyways. And that will do it here on Believe in the Pod. Believe in the Pac-12 on the Believe Podcast Network. Do us a favor, hit that rate, review, and subscribe button. Share with your friends as we will keep this thing rolling through the bowl season. For Ryan Leaf, my name is Jonathan Griffin. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you real soon. Enjoy bowl season, and we hope you enjoyed the Pac-12 season as crazy as it was. Stay safe. We'll be back soon right here on Believe in the Pac-12 on the Believe Podcast Network.